Yeah, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9. We're here in Sandusky, Ohio, Code Mash, the 10th edition. How many have you been to, my friend?
This is my first one.
First one?
First one attending and speaking.
Oh my goodness. Well, this is my friend Matt Renzi. How you doing, buddy?
Very good.
So tell us what you do.
Well, I'm an independent software consultant, and I have about 16 years of professional experience building large-scale desktop server and cloud-based data applications.
Fantastic, and you have some talks that you're giving.
Yep, I'm doing one on the economic psychology and science of agile software development,
okay.
And another one on exploratory data analysis with R.
So let's start with the first, because okay. When you're talking about the psychology of agile methodologies,
yep.
That's kind of an interesting take. Usually we're only looking at first you do this, and then you do this, and then you have this person that does this, and this.
Yep.
So tell us about the psychology a little bit.
Well, and interestingly, that's why I chose to do this talk. Most presentations I've seen on Agile either cover like what Agile is or how to do Agile
sure.
processes, whereas this one focuses on why Agile is specifically successful based on these concepts from economic psychology and science. Mostly things I learned while I was in college that the Agile experts didn't even talk about in their presentations on it. So a lot of it involves like communication structures and how they're better suited for solving the complex tasks that agile software projects solve, in addition to things that help with keeping up with market uncertainty and
right.
the other areas that agile is really beneficial.
So let's talk a little bit about, let's give an example, because usually we don't talk about the economy
mm-hmm.
or the psychology of,
yep.
of agile. Can you give us sort of something that you do in agile that you can sort of describe the psychology and the economy of it both?
Well, as far as the economics go, one of the things that we do is with the product backlog, essentially organizing things in terms of business value or more specifically return on investment allows us to create software in such a way that we're maximizing the return on investment over the life of the project by delivering the highest value features first, highest value, lowest cost features
sure.
first, and then moving throughout the project. It also allows us to know when to stop as well, too, because with waterfall or traditional software development, you essentially build until you get to the end of the project scope.
Right.
But with Agile, you can essentially say, okay, we're now getting diminishing returns on investment for each additional feature adding to such an extent that it's no longer valuable to
yeah.
continue adding features. So we can just end the project and move on and do something else at that point in time.
So for those that aren't familiar with the backlog, is the backlog sort of the list of features that
yes.
we want to do but we still haven't committed time to?
Yes, the list of the features that we're interested in building that are ranked in terms of the priority, usually by either business value or more specifically they should be by the return on investment of each additional
I
feature.
I see, and so your assertion is that if we look at the economy of each of these particular items in our backlog, we have a better way of actually sorting for the best economic value for our organization.
Yeah, based on economic theory, essentially the way they're doing agile software agrees with that, whether people actually realize that or not.
So let's talk about the psychology and maybe sort of the structure of Agile mm-hmm. when it comes to how people are organized and how the psychology sort of bears out in
yep.
there.
Well, as far as communication structures, we know that as you increase the number of people on a development team, the number of communication channels increases exponentially, or
right.
not quite exponentially, but order n squared
right.
or quadratically. And so when we get beyond 7 ± 2 people, we essentially overload the communication structure. So there's all sorts of psychological implications of that and problems with the communication structure and just the way teams interact. And they'll also start subdividing into little tribes
sure, sure.
within their team, even though they're supposed to be one separate team.
And so is there a way in Agile to sort of counteract that?
Yeah, by keeping the team sizes relatively small. In addition, they also utilize other aspects of psychology, things like the wisdom of the crowds. So by taking the collective or the aggregated guesses of the individuals in the team, oftentimes it produces better results than even experts in certain like areas of knowledge. It doesn't always work, like certain things like domain expertise dominates in certain domain-specific
sure.
fields. But yeah, there's actually quite a bit of psychology involved in it.
So just the fact of knowing that team size mm-hmm. really affects communication sort of in order n squared, so
yep.
to speak. Is that argue for the fact that if you're doing Agile, that's great, but if your teams are really large, it's really not Agile at all?
Well, and that's, you know, there's kind of this spectrum of, you know, like traditional waterfall software development
sure, sure.
where everything's kind of planned and documented and upfront. And then there's this kind of like pure hypothetical Agile. I don't think either of these two things exist in both ends of the spectrum. Everything's somewhere kind of in between. So I assume there's certain aspects that would be considered more Agile by keeping your team size small, preferably 7 ± 2 people or 6 ± 1, depending upon who you talk to, with a preference for smaller teams versus, you know, other things that might go in other directions too.
That's awesome. So agile methodologies, we looked at economy and psychology. Let's change gears now.
Yep.
The other talk is on R. Will you tell us a little bit about what R is and why it's such a cool thing?
So R is a statistical programming language that's been around for quite a while, used primarily in academia, but it's become very popular in the commercial side of the world because of the explosion of data and data analytics.
Sure.
So it's very good for statistical data analysis and also for data visualization as well. It's also being used for a lot of machine learning and data mining as well these days too.
Well, it looks like you have a little bit of a demo. Maybe you can show us how we get started with it.
Well, we're going to do just a little bit of data visualization here in R. So I've loaded some data already. It's the Open Movies database, and essentially I've just got some data from 2000 to 2015. So we're just going to do some quick data visualizations of like bar charts for the ratings categories.
Cool.
So we can see the number of ratings in each category.
So it looks like what you did is, did you highlight a line and just hit enter, or what did you do?
I'm essentially just running through the script by hitting control enter on the line that I'm on.
And control enter runs the whole program up to line 8, for example?
It essentially just runs that specific line.
Okay.
So I could be working in the interactive console at the bottom, or I could be working by executing the scripts. So I'm just executing the scripts one line at a time, which then transcribes it into the console and executes it down there. And then we get our data visualizations in the pane on the right-hand side. So in addition to the frequencies, we could also do parts of whole as a pie chart, though a lot of data visualization experts discourage the use of pie charts for various reasons.
Yeah, I've heard.
Yeah. In addition, if we're working with quantitative variables, a single quantitative variable, we can do things like create a dot plot, which is just a quick visualization showing each observation along that that dimension of the data. Or a better visualization might be a box plot, which gives us the five-number summary statistics for that variable. Or a histogram might make more sense to show the distribution over the entire dimension. Or a kernel density estimation or density plot might make more sense in that specific case. And we can add that dot plot at the bottom just to show that these are all the same visualizations of the same data. We can also do things like bivariate visualizations of qualitative variables, that is two categorical variables, with a spine plot, or sometimes a better visualization is a mosaic plot.
Nice.
And we can do things like bivariate visualizations for two quantitative variables, which would be a scatter plot in this case.
We're looking
at movie runtime on the x-axis and box office revenue on the y-axis.
So you can do comparison of the data.
Yep. Same thing with critic score and box office revenue here. Or we can create line graphs, like this is the number of movies released each year over time. And it drops off very sharp at the end because they haven't added all of the movies to the data set yet. Or we can also do things like look at both a qualitative and a quantitative variable, like a bar chart here of the, average movie, average box office revenue by movie rating category. And same thing for genre as well.
So this is looking like a lot of magic. What's going on underneath? Like, for example, when you say genres, dollar sign, box at office, what is it that this is actually calling into?
Well, there's the underlying programming language, and then there's also the base data visualization or base plotting system in R. So everything I'm doing here is with the base plotting system, but R is very extensible, so there's also several other graphics or data visualization packages like ggplot2 or Lattice.
Sure.
This is just the stuff that's built in out of the box. I've got other presentations on data visualization, but I don't go into much of that.
Absolutely. So I'm not familiar with. I've played with R before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what this syntax is telling me. So what is genres, dollar sign, box, dot office telling you?
So the dollar sign is kind of like the dot operator in the .NET languages. So essentially we're saying the genres variable, which contains a data frame, which is equivalent to like a table in most languages.
Can we scroll down and see what the data frame looks like?
Yeah, let me grab this here. And I'll just open it up as a table. And so this is the genres.
As
we can see, we've got each movie listed once for each genre that it's included.
So in Python, this would be like a pandas sort of data frame as well.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I think that concept may have actually been derived from R, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, it might be, yeah.
And then the last data visualization we have here is in the event you want to visualize an entire table at once, this will take a second or two to load up, we can create a scatterplot matrix, which essentially is going to show us all combinations of all dimensions of the data all at once. So for example, a little bit ago we looked at the movie runtime on the x-axis and the movie box office on the y-axis, which gives us this data visualization here.
That's awesome. And so fairly quickly, because how did you load the data? Was it like a CSV file that it sucked in?
In fact, I can actually show you real
quick. Let's do it.
It was just, we set the working directory to the directory we want to load the data from. And in this case, I'm loading it as a tab delimited data. And it's extremely flexible with its ability to load in data. There's literally hundreds of data sources you can load in.
That's fantastic. And so literally you took a file of data and we just started analyzing the heck out of it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So where can people go to find out more about R, or if they want to get started, what's a good place to go?
The first thing I recommend is just go to the R website. R is free. You can download it, install it. RStudio, which is the IDE we're using here, which sits on top of R and uses R under the hood, that's free as well, too. So you can go to the RStudio website for training. I'm an author with Pluralsight,
sure.
So I've created the it's exploratory data analysis with R presentation, and I'm currently working on data visualization with R for them, too. And then there's several websites. Revolution Analytics has great information. Yep. And our blogger, and there's also a flowing data for data visualization as well.
That's fantastic. And most people might not know this, but on Azure ML, you can actually put R functions directly into some of the nodes to process some data and make visualizations.
Yep, that's huge. In fact, most people I've talked to about it say it's probably one of the best and easiest ways to operationalize R scripts, because typically people would have to take the R scripts and either convert it into a different language to get it to run on their servers, or host R using some kind of like R hosting environment.
Well, this is awesome. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you for having me.
This is, again, Matt. We're here in Sandusky, Ohio. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.